My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines, and we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener, Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game, amen. No rain from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game, amen. No rain
from... Whoa, hey now, it's the Mike and JD Show, and I am your host, Mike Gilbert. And I'm joined as always by JD, by God Oliva. How you doing, JD?
Dude, it is quiet in this house right now. We're on Thanksgiving break, which I don't know how you guys did it in Hawaii and California and now in the South, but here in Illinois, you get a full week off of school, right?
Oh, really?
So I don't, the kids have been off since Friday, right? But I have parent-teacher conferences tomorrow, which don't start until noon, which is good, except I have wrestling breaks. So I have wrestling breaks at 10:30. So, and also if I want to get a weightlifting session, I have to get in early. So like, essentially I have a normal long day of work tomorrow and Tuesday. And we have our first wrestling meet of the year on Wednesday. So I've got like a 2-day break for the holiday.
I'm actually doing really well. I need to clean my desk. I had a leftover water bottle and a leftover snack mix from Friday. So, but all is well. We had a really good weekend. Nothing really like crazy happened, but fun stuff. What's the look?
I was in the middle of telling a story. I was wondering if I cut out on you.
No. You said, how are you doing, Mike? And I jumped in and started saying,
I never said, how are you doing, Mike?
I thought you did.
No, I did not. I was bitching about my. I was about to go into a tirade about my lazy ass coworkers who actually do get a 10-day break and I don't. And like, no, that's why I was like, I assumed that I cut out. That's why I gave you that weird look.
You were saying like, I don't know how you did things and these like places that you've lived, and then you're like, well, here we get the whole week off. I could have sworn you said, Phil, continue your story. My bad.
I'm good, man. That's way funnier that way. So, yeah, no, it's good. It's all fine. I get a couple days off a break. My kid and the wife were up north. Andy's hunting. He sized up his first deer and missed. Couldn't get the safety off. Yeah. I've never been hunting in my life, so my 9-year-old is more manly than I am at this point.
Yeah, that's something that I could just never do. My grandparents and my uncles like tried to get me to go, and like I even, you know, they shot the guns and we're shooting targets and we're getting ready for it. And when it came time to go out and actually like kill a deer or even like a turkey, like when you're kids, they take you on turkey shoots, and like that's how you get your Thanksgiving turkey in California in some parts. Really? I couldn't do it. And my mom explained, she's like, you don't have the heart for that. You love animals too much. I was like, yeah, but I love to eat animals. She goes, yeah, that's different. You don't want to be the one killing them. I was like, that, okay. So like I knew at a young age that I just couldn't go hunting.
Dude, my kid loves animals, like adores them. Like the dog is the most important person in the world to him. So I didn't think he'd be able to do it. And today he called me bitching that like the safety got stuck. Like I'm like, holy shit, you're more cold-blooded than I thought. I mean, like, man, I'm from the suburbs. I've never touched a gun in my life, let alone gone hunting. My wife is a farm girl. So my father-in-law, you know, it's part of the culture, you know, but northern Wisconsin, they all go hunting. They have days off. They have days off school to go hunting, which is wild to me. But so it's him and his grandpa get to kind of bond doing that. And not my thing, but that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. I'm not a gun guy really, but I do have, I'm staring at a couple of them right now in my office here because, you know, when we were in California, I've told this story before. My wife wasn't a gun person either. Like her dad is, but neither one of us were really like big on guns. And when we were in California, a homeless guy got jumped by some gang members in Fairfield, California, jumped him in our front yard, and they were beating him down with a stick. And I come out of my house, and I'm wearing my uniform. So not only do they have my address, they know what I look like, and they have my last name because my name tag's on. And so I'm looking at it, and then like I kind of like – they looked at me, and they took off. And – so I had to go render first aid to this guy, and I had to like he had a really bad head injury, so I'm like helping this guy, and I call the cops, right? And like they show up, and here I am. I called the cops and some gang members that have all seen my face; they know where I live. And so I talked to one of the cops that I knew the guy, and I was like, "So you think those guys are gonna come after me?" He goes, "You know, normally I would say no, but they did just jump a guy." I was like. I was like, well, you know, we have a security system and we have a dog. And he goes, are you armed? I go, no. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And this is in the Bay Area of California, by the way, where it's like most people are not big gun people. It's really difficult to get a gun out there. And so I talked to the cop. He's like, you guys need to at least have something in your house. And so we made sure to have that in the house. And then I just got gifted, a 44 Magnum. My grandpa just gifted me one, so sent it from gun store to gun store. So I have.
I'm not an anti-gun person. Like I actually kind of, it's not like I don't believe them. I just never grew up around them. Like I'm of the mind that I don't think about it, you know, like it never occurs to me. Like if someone said you should own a gun, I'd be like, well, maybe you're right. Like, but I would never be like, I'm not one of those liberals who's like, oh my God, how can you touch a gun? Well, I live in the real world. I know not everybody likes me.
Right.
But like at the same time, I just don't, I think it would be ridiculous if I started, you know, starting to talk about something because it's just not me. And, you know, my wife grew up around them, but she's just like, I really don't want one in our house. And I just, I mean, it's just not on my mind. And I live in the sticks. So like, it doesn't really matter. Like, right. I don't know. I just don't think about it.
Yeah, no, I feel like I was the same way, but you know, now that I got kids, I think about safety more often, and I'm still, you know, I'm on the outskirts of Charlotte, which does have a high crime rate. So I think it's, you know, for our family, it's good and they're safe, and I have them locked away so the kids can't get to them and they don't know where the keys at. So
yeah, I lived in the Chicago suburbs and I never thought about it, you know, like plenty of crime. It's never thought about it. Yeah.
But JD, nobody here came here to talk about our two liberals talking about the Second Amendment.
But, or their like blasé attitude toward it, I guess.
Yeah.
You know. Not lukewarm, but yeah, I'm gonna have a controversial take for you, Mike. I have a controversial take. You want to hear my take? I liked the pay-per-view last night. I thought it was pretty freaking good.
You liked AEW Full Gear. Yeah, that is a controversial statement because online the AEW sickos, they're not happy with this, and they're usually pretty happy with just about anything. I do think that they're a bit spoiled, those people. And so whenever they're going through it and they're upset, it brings me such joy because a lot of them come after me every time TNA screws up, and TNA screws up a lot. Frequently. So they're constantly after me. And to see some of them and our friend King of the North, we love the king of all Canadians, although Canada is part of like the royal kingdom. Like they do bow down to the current king of England. But he is the king of Canada. So he is you know, part of that local monarchy, but he's still subservient to the King of England. But he was going through it, man. He actually swore off AEW and he quit pro wrestling until Wrestle Kingdom. He's and the Blue Jays lost to the Dodgers. That brother is not having a good time right now.
The king had a crash out, as the kids say, last night. Which actually, because I was I got the pay per view, but I was kind of tired yesterday because I've been, you know, busy week at work and stuff like that. And I actually had an 18-hour day on Friday, so I was really tired Saturday. So I got home, I put on the show, and I just kind of, you know, I liked the opener, which I'm supposed to hate because they did the thing where it bleeds over and from the pre-show into the pay-per-view. I'm supposed to hate that, like Raj Geary tells me. And I'm a firm believer in the church of Raj Geary. So like, yeah. I hated it. I was so mad that Mystico came out.
I got a theory as to why I think they did that again, because all of the people that you normally that would hate it did hate it. So they did it again just to piss those people off.
Which I respect completely.
Yes.
But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I watched the show and I was tired last night, so I'm like, oh, I guess I'll pick up it on Sunday. And then I see the online vitriol, and I'm like, oh, I have to watch this now. People are angry now. Yeah. I have to watch this, and I'm glad I did, dude. I loved this show. I thought it was great. Like, I do think there was I think going back to back with the non-disqualification matches was a little bit much for me personally. I wish I like to see. I kind of wish that I did like. So I really like Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly. They had a non-disqualification match. It was basically like Moxley is saying his old death jitsu. That just sounds so stupid to me. But they actually made that concept work because it was nothing but Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly stabbing each other with a fork while exchanging legitimate jujitsu holds between. And it was actually like, okay, they made that work. Like,
that's how I would envision death jitsu, right? Like,
and it was like, it was exactly what you'd expect. Like Kyle O'Reilly, like Moxley was getting a tie on Kyle O'Reilly and he stabbed him in the hand with a fork, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, that's a great way to get that move. That's pretty smart. So I quite and then Moxley tapped again. So they're doing something really interesting with John Moxley right now. The King crashed out. I saw, and this is what motivated me to watch the show, because Moxley hit the curb stomp, which he's been hitting for over a year now, and I love that Moxley does the curb stomp because it's very Japanese. Right.
Yeah.
It's very much a New Japan, or even it goes back a little bit, where you oftentimes will use the moves that your mentors or your friends will do. Right. So I dig that Moxley does the curb stomp. Right. It's a little tip of the cap to his shield days. Right. And then the crowd, because it's a pay-per-view crowd, 10,000 people, and AEW fans typically watch all wrestling. It's been that way from jump. Right. AEW fans typically just like wrestling.
I can confirm that there was people in the crowd that go in New Jersey that goes to all big pro wrestling shows that come there. Like if it's a big pro wrestling show, my buddy, I want to give him a shout out. We were stationed together at Travis Air Force Base. My buddy Tom Le Guin, he took his son there, and he's been going to. He and I got heat for many different reasons. The first reason is when we were stationed together, he didn't watch wrestling. So I was going to wrestling shows and he never came because he's a fucking idiot. And then he waits until he lives on the East Coast, and then he starts watching wrestling. So jerk. And the second reason is he's a Van Halen fan, but he doesn't think the Sammy Hagar version is good. He only likes the David Lee Roth version. And stops. I'm like, you know, fuck you. Sammy Hagar can fucking sing, dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no. Never trust a person who tells you that the only Van Halen to listen to is David Lee Roth. There's nothing wrong with the Sammy Hagar era of Van Halen. Yes, there's too many power ballads, but pop music in general was infested with power ballads. That's what was selling at the time. And I can't fault Red Rocker for what was for doing what was popular and what was selling albums. Right Thank now you, JD. Is a fucking classic. Humans Being is one of the best Van Halen songs of all time. It's the last thing he did. Now, if you tell me you like the Gary Cherone era of Van Halen, I'll tell you you're stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I have no
In fact, I don't even dare bring up that era, but I think David Lee Roth era, obviously best era. It's like the best. I think David Lee Roth is one of the greatest frontmen of any band like ever. He's just a great frontman, but Sammy Hagar is an amazing fucking singer, right?
Yeah.
And there's nothing he can't sing. David Lee Roth can't sing Sammy Hagar songs, but Sammy Hagar can sing David Lee Roth songs, right? Like Sammy Hagar he is multi-talented. He's just not as charismatic as David Lee Roth. And the original Van Halen was a different vibe, than Sammy Hagar's vibe. Cause like you said, it was later 80s power ballad. They're doing more poppier type stuff. Not that early Van Halen wasn't also poppy. It was, but it was more like power ballad stuff. Like you were saying in the later 80s, early 90s.
Let's be honest. Sammy Hagar didn't need to join Van Halen. Sammy Hagar was already successful. He was successful in Montrose. He was successful on his own. And then they invited him to join. Right. And the reason why Sammy Hagar didn't have to be as charismatic as David Lee Roth is he actually has talent. So when you actually possess talent and can play the guitar and you can sing and you're just fucking cool as hell, you can do that. Right. Sammy Hagar didn't need it. Now, a lot of David Lee Roth, like people are like, oh, it's all crap. Like Van Halen covered like Pretty Woman when David Lee Roth was in the band. Like, give me a fucking break. Like, there's plenty of bad Van Halen from before David, but one of the great bands ever. Don't get me wrong. It's a different band with Sammy Hagar. Now, again, like I said, if you're going to tell me the Gary Cherone stuff was good, you're stupid. We'll curve this back in. Like, so redirect two guys with ADHD.
Hey, I just want to tell one of my really good friends who listens to the show to eat shit. So we're saying.
I appreciate that. Anytime. Any of my friends who are listening to the show can also eat shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, I like that Moxley does the curb stomp, but I you know, for about 10 seconds, a couple fans did the Seth Rollins chant because a lot of AEW fans watch All Wrestling. And it lasted like 10 seconds. And the King like really went over the top with his crash out. This is the kind of audience an AEW has cultivated. He's not terribly wrong with that. But again, it was fine for what it was on the pay-per-view. That being said, I enjoyed that match where it was Kyle O'Reilly got his second submission win over John Moxley in 10 days, which I didn't see coming. Moxley's tapped three times now. They're telling an interesting story with him. I'm not 100% sure I know where it's going, and I kind of appreciate that. I like Darby and Pac. It was fine for which was essentially the true opener of the show. Good match on there. Mark Briscoe and the Protostar. I hate that. Yeah. I just hate that they call him that. That's not a word. I was ready to kind of not want to watch him because it followed up Moxley and Kyle O'Reilly. And I was like, oh, man, two plunder matches in a row. I'm not into it. Man, I tell you what, I made the decision that I wasn't going to like this match. And then I was super into it by the end because Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe are great pro wrestlers. They really are. Mm-hmm. And it was a different vibe to it. They have so many fucking titles in this company, but I do kind of like the fact they did something with Mark Briscoe, who's been super over for 2 years in this company as a solo act. And like, it's the TNT title. Like, it's just, it's whatever. But like, at least it's an acknowledgement that he's over and people like him. So I'm okay with that. You know, the Casino Gauntlet. I really like Casino Gauntlet. I think AEW has stumbled into their own version of the Royal Rumble.
I agree. I think the match works. Counterpoint. Mm-hmm. They do it way too often. I don't know how many times they've done it this year, but they've done it several times this year. And they've done it for men and women. And so I if I were them, I would make that one of my big matches and I would do it once a year.
I agree.
Once or twice. I have similar criticisms to the ladder matches and similar criticism to the Ultimate X match. I think they do it way too many times, like once, twice at tops, but I they just do it way too many times.
I agree. I can't argue that at one point. Like, it should be once a year. And I hate saying that because, well, then it's exactly like the Royal Rumble. But I mean, like, you do keep it special. I mean, it's not a bad deal because they want to declare another championship title, which I don't know why we need. Counterpoint to my own point, I love the AEW National Heavyweight title. It's because, it is exactly the same as the, now people are like, it's the same as the old NWA TV title. Not only is it the same as the old NWA World Television title, it's also the same as the old NWA National Heavyweight title, and it's also the same as the WWF Hogan 1985 champ, or 1985, no, I'm right, championship belt. Reggie Parks loved this design and used it constantly.
It's the same as the current NWA National title. Exactly the same.
No, it isn't. The current NWA title is that old, like, United, it has a United States shape to it. The one that might
be. Oh, okay. I could have swore I saw somebody put them side by side, but maybe that was the old NWA National title.
Old NWA National title on there. And it said, because he's wearing one that actually, strangely enough, never was the NWA United was the NWA national title design. It was the NWA United States title design, which was also the original WWWF title design. So
yeah, we need to get a big whiteboard behind you and have your writing and all the different. Yeah.
I'm not a belt guy, but I'm kind of a belt guy. I like designs. I teach design, right? I love design. I just like the design of this particular belt. It's kind of funny. People are like, the NWA title and national title belt is like this historical title. It's like, no, not really. The belt only existed for 6 years. It's only a 6-year title. It's not that
well, long. True. But the argument, and I know we talked about this last week, is that they were claiming the lineage and NWA had already done that gimmick, claiming the lineage. And so Tony Khan has backed off of that, and he actually had a good conversation with Billy Corgan. So,
and he gave Billy the rights to Shockwave.
No, I don't think he gave the rights to Shockwave. I think he just stopped trying to use it because Billy fought him over the trademark. So they were fighting over the trademark and he just stopped the fight. Billy's going to get it now because AEW planned on using it, but Billy had already been using it. So
at some point we need to find out whatever happened with that rumored Fox show. Like at some point someone needs to ask that question of Tony,
because Tony Khan will never answer it, but I think you get enough substances and swerve, because he was the one that put it out there in public, that maybe he'll say what he knows.
Speaking of Swerve, looks like there's some substances in him currently.
He looked great.
Love the design of the belt. Like that it's on Ricochet. It's amazing to me. People for years said Ricochet had no personality, right?
Yeah.
Remember that? Ricochet has no personality. Ricochet is the most annoying ass heel in wrestling, I believe. He irritates the shit out of me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, he's great. When he first came in, I didn't like what he was doing when he first came into AEW. I wanted nothing to do with it. And then he won me over. Here's my gripe with him being the national champion. And I knew he was going to be the national champion because on Wednesday, Bobby Lashley squashed him and made him look like a geek. And that was them foreshadowing that, yes, of course, he's putting over Bobby Lashley on Wednesday. So on Saturday, he's going to be the champion. I know Dave had pointed that out, and I knew that was happening. And TNA does the same shit. WWE is the same shit. I just kind of want AEW to be better than that. I want them to be above that. But no, they aren't. They're falling into a lot of the same booking tropes by beating a guy and then giving him a belt a few days later.
I don't disagree with that. WWE does it all the time. Or at least they did. I'm not showing years. If you don't do it all the time, I think it's fine. Right. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And because it's Ricochet, that dude can eat a ton of losses, and he's actually pretty good at getting his heat back. So it worked. I actually liked the Casino Gauntlet match quite a bit. It was a lot of fun. Like I said, I just enjoy that concept. I'm a dick. I fast forwarded through the women's matches because I had to get the show done. I had to get that show done to do our show. So I skipped matches that I felt were skippable. And, you know, people.
You watched FTR and Brodito, though, right?
Sure did. I was going to hold on that. I'm also supposed to be mad because FTR, who are awesome, who are one of the best tag teams of all time, who have a fantastic manager that finally has his niche in the company, right? I'm supposed to be mad that FTR won these titles back because they're friends with CM Punk in real life. I'm supposed to be outraged because a good tag in an era where AEW tag teams really aren't that great, although Brodito is a lot of fun. I do like Brodito. Yeah. I do hate that every fucking tag team in this goddamn company has a Bennifer name now that it irritates the shit out of me. But
it's so annoying.
It's so annoying. I want Tony to just stop altogether with this crap. But I mean, I'm supposed to be mad that one of the best tag teams ever, that has a great gimmick, that are awesome in the ring, that have fantastic matches, are champions again because they're friends with Phil. I don't know, man. What they re-signed with this company.
It's I mean, they who cares who their friends are? They work for AEW and they've been soldiers for the company. And not only that, they've been laying low. And I think it was Ibu that made this point on Twitter. They've been laying low and they've been working with a lot of the up and coming tag teams and making them look good and trying to help solidify the tag team division, because as you said, it's been a struggling division for a while now. And they went to the bottom for a while, and now they're back at the top, and now a tag team like Jet Speed might actually be a contender for them, and they can work with some of these other tag teams that they had not only worked with but had lost to it at certain points. So I don't understand the FTR hate, other than, like you said, it's more geared around towards A, they were friends with CM Punk, and B, part of the gimmick that FTR were, how they were created, is that they were like anti-Young Bucks. Like, they had, that was them carving their niche out, no flips, just fists, were the anti-Young Bucks. And it worked, and they made a lot of money with the Young Bucks when they came over. Like, it was the perfect gimmick.
And they will again, because guess who turned babyface on this show? The Young Bucks. And Kenny kind of, boy, they seem so detached from this promotion right now, all three of those guys. So I'm kind of happy we got the Young Bucks back as babyfaces, because looks, this entitled heel run for the last couple of years, it just hasn't worked. So I
haven't, of course their matches are good. Like, I'm never going to say their matches aren't good, but I don't think they've done anything interesting in a bit. And the whole them like needing money and all the skits and stuff they've been doing with Tony Khan, I just, that's a fast forward for me. That's an easy skip. That's a waste of my time. And so I'm glad that the Elite's back together, which it's like the second or third time they've done a reunion, but I'm glad we're here now.
Yeah, I'm okay with it too. But again, like, the whole thing is very Young Bucks. It's very being the Elite-ish. So I mean, it's just kind of what they do. That being said, I feel like everything is in a better place. Now, main event time, right? Let's talk main event just a little bit. Fucking Samoa Joe is the world champion. I don't think anybody, if you put, you can gamble on pro wrestling now, which is just lunacy to say that out loud.
Dude, I'm glad you brought that up. So this is so fucking funny. I get a phone call yesterday from my buddy BQ. He lives in Vegas. He does another TNA show. He and I do shows together sometimes. And he calls me and he goes, "Hey man, you watch AEW more than I do. I'm getting ready to put some money down on the pay-per-view." And I'm thinking like he's talking about like buying the pay-per-view, but no, he's getting ready to gamble on the pay-per-view. He goes, "I'm getting ready to gamble." And he goes, "Mercedes Moné and Kyle Fletcher, they're both underdogs right now, but there's no way in hell that either one of them are losing." And I was just like, "Oh yeah, no way. They're both winning for sure. Put your money down." And sure enough, sorry, dude, they both lost.
Now, I didn't think Moné was going to win. I think Moné is going to be, I think Moné will hold like 50 belts and will never be able to win the AEW women's title.
That would be fun.
Like, yeah. I think that's kind of, and I think she kind of gets that too. She's pretty slick. Like, I think that's going to be the story they tell. Cause it's like, I think a lot of people don't get the Mercedes Moné character is that she's all bluster, right? Yeah. Like a lot of people have like, "I'm sorry, but Dave brain," like Dave, whenever Dave says something, it's so like surface line. I'm not insulting him, but like, he always, it's like Dave kind of misses subtlety sometimes with characters. And like, it's like she's not like people. "Oh, she got creative control, and she's got this, she's got that, she got all these titles." Blah, blah, blah. It's bluster, right? It's bravado. It's false bravado. She's unable to wrest the large title away. That's the story they're telling right now. If she has the AEW women's title on top of this plethora of other championships, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's why it's a good story, because like, she has all this, but she can't get the one thing. Right, that's why that works. But so, whatever. But anyway, back to the main event. Joe's the champ. I don't think anybody thought that Hangman Page would lose the title so quickly, and I, for one, welcome it, because I don't know, man. The Virginian's boring to me. I like his matches, don't get me wrong, but I kind of find him to be more like Sting, a little more interesting in the chase than as champ. And like, I don't know, like. I find this to be, I mean, like a lot of people. So I've always said, I don't know if heel heat can draw. And I feel like yesterday's show, they went really, really hard with getting that heel heat. Right. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's from a storytelling perspective, like act two in a play typically tends to be the best act, because like, or in a book, because that's like when the baby faces, you know, their backs are against the wall and it looks like the good guys are down and the bad guys are going to rule, like Empire Strikes Back, for example. You know, the rebels are fucked at the end of Empire Strikes Back, and everybody largely considers that the best movie of the series. This is kind of where we are right now with this promotion. It's like all these heels are reigning, and the fans are really, really upset. Like, it felt like, man, damn, old school heat is on this. Can it work?
Yeah. So old school heat draws. I don't know if it still draws. Like it did.
Yeah, I don't know.
It did. You know, and TNA just did this with Mike Santana. There are some major differences, and I'm gonna get to that in a second. There's some major differences, and there's a reason why that one took so much vitriol from the internet, more so than, and trust me, a lot of people are hating the Samoa Joe thing too. It's getting a ton of people saying they don't want to watch AEW right now because of it. TNA just went through that with this whole Frankie Kazarian and Mike Santana deal. And I think you're right. I think that heat doesn't draw as like it used to. I think everybody wants to just go home happy. And knowing that, I think that's the reason why, you know, AEW, whenever they did the whole screw job. And I think that if you're not a fan of screw jobs, that this, the main event was a very much, it seemed like it was booked by Jeff Jarrett, to be honest with you. Which he works there. He might've had a hand in the producing of the match, but you know, you had the ref bump, and then there's lots of blood. You had the ref bump. You had,
the hook turn.
You had Shibata getting involved, and then you had Will Hobbs breaking the chain, which reminded me of Kane and the first blood and Kane, whenever he did the Hell in a Cell match. And then you had Hook doing the big swerve and the screw job in the end, and you're sending the crowd home mad. But because AEW doesn't like to send the crowd home mad completely, I think they've only done that one time, and that was the time that they put the bag over Bryan Danielson's head.
I was in that crowd. I was in that crowd. I was ecstatic. I thought it was great.
Yeah. So I think that's why they had Swerve come out, is because you're right. I don't think that the heel draws the way that heat draws the way that it used to. So knowing that, they had Swerve come back, and they're already foreshadowing his next opponent. And I think a lot of people think that Samoa Joe is just going to be a transitional champion over to Swerve. And I think that's a real possibility, but I think we're also forgetting that MJF is set to come back at some point. And I think that they would like to go back to him too. So they have a lot of viable champions that are set to come back. Here's the major difference with the whole Mike Santana and Frankie Kazarian thing. Trust me, the parallels are there. It is like a company intentionally cutting the legs out from a top babyface short, right, with a screw job finish, sending the crowd home mad. And they did it prematurely. TNA did it after a month, but it was his first title defense with Santana. Here's the major difference. Look at Samoa Joe, and then look at Frankie Kazarian. Samoa Joe, all-time legend. Former world champion in not only Ring of Honor TNA but AEW, a believable and NXT. He never really broke through like that upper echelon in the main roster. He had some main events, but he was never
wasn't allowed to really.
Yeah, he wasn't really a top guy there. But it's fucking Samoa Joe. Now Frankie Kazarian, he plays the chicken shit heel comedy character, and nobody takes the guy seriously. People take Samoa Joe very fucking serious. So those are two parallels right there. It was Mike Santana's first title defense, and it was a big screw job, and they ended it on, and they're trying to get heat, and we know where they're trying to go with it. And another reason why it's a bit different is because they screwed over Mike Santana earlier in the year on Slammiversary, sent everybody home mad. He wins it a few months later, not in his hometown, in front of a little bit of a smaller audience, and had to follow the Hardys and the Dudley Boys. And after that match, a lot of people left. So it was, you know, the whole vibe was off. So the whole, like, Mike Santana's entire win was kind of screwed over. So it's like a compounding of things. A bunch of stuff happening all at once is the reason why people hate the TNA screw job more than they hate the AEW screw job. Whilst there are still some people that hate it. Me, I was like, it's a little bit short for Adam Page. I was like, that's a little bit too soon. But I was like, I can't be mad because it's Samoa Joe, and he's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And he's sitting there with fucking blood all over his face after a cage match. I didn't think the match was that good, to be honest with you. Like leading up to the interferences and the ref bumps and the screw job, I thought it was fairly basic. I think the crowd was pretty exhausted by that point. You got to remember, it's like midnight on the East Coast, and they've been watching a lot of wrestling for a long time. So I think that was tough. You know, but the Swerve return was cool, and I think they made it right and sent everybody home happy. And now we get to see probably Samoa Joe and Swerve coming up here pretty soon.
So, I don't disagree with anything you said. I think Joe is credible and has been credible and for 20 years now, but I mean, this company specifically has been credible since the day he walked in. He's a main event talent and has always been treated like that. It was definitely a surprise. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing though, because people are so passionate about Hangman for reasons. I don't know. He's fine. I don't know. I've never like been in love with Hangman Page. Like, I think he's fine. Like,
well, we started our first episode on the Voices of Wrestling Network was when we compared him to Gavrilo Princip of World War One.
We did do
the
that
Serbian that took out Franz Ferdinand and, you know, of Austria-Hungary and kicked off the whole conflict. Like, he was the one that set CM Punk off to begin, and that's what screwed over his first title reign, really. And I think that's one of the reasons why people are so upset, is like, we finally got this title reign. We're thinking we're going to get a real title reign. AEW, he's like the main character of AEW, and he has been since day one. And now we finally got the second title reign, and we're thinking he's going to get a legit one. CM Punk's out of the company. Everybody's injured, right? He's the only guy. and Samoa Joe's fucking 47 years old. So, like, it doesn't make sense that he would be the champion, other than the fact that everybody still loves the guy. So, like, you would think Adam would get a long title reign. He was primed for it, but they cut his legs out, but you know what I mean? They beat the guy, and they beat him rather quickly. And he didn't really get that many main events out of this title run. He had two matches with Samoa Joe, and then who did he wrestle and MJF, right? So he had, what, three big matches, and he lost one. So if you're a huge Adam Page fan, which a lot of AEW fans are, I could see why they would be upset by that.
Let me counterpoint this. Make a point. You make a good argument. I think that we have been conditioned in the current era to think that, like, in order for a title reign to be successful, it has to be long, right? Yeah. A lot of that comes from the fact that when we were kids, title reigns lasted weeks, right? During the golden era of the Attitude Era, tired of talking about it, title reigns lasted a couple months at tops, right? And it was just the way it was. And in the decade since, in the current decade, we've become accustomed to longer title reigns, to the point where they're expected. So I do think doing the unexpected sometimes is a good thing, especially when business isn't great. Let's be honest, from a business perspective, the crowds haven't shown up for the Hangman. Right. Everybody says he's this beloved guy, but, like, he hasn't had a huge impact on tickets or, you know, buys. It was like, I'm not seeing it. It seems like everything is as normal.
Yeah.
Yes, continue.
So last month, they sold less tickets than Bound for Glory, which I'm sure Tony Khan does not love. This month, though, they did over 10,000. I think, from what I can gather, they had a late ticket surge. I think they had some comps in the New York area that went out, and so comps happen. Yeah, which is normal, but
yeah, that happens every show. St. Louis won a shitty wrestling town. They never should have ran that show in St. Louis. Two, you're right, which because the Hangman's not a huge draw as champ.
No.
Some guys draw better in the chase. They just do. Which brings me to my second point. From a storytelling perspective, I'll say this again and again. When you're telling a story is you have character A, your main character, so to say, has a goal. Something is standing in the way of that goal. That is the story. The stuff that happens in between is whatever, but that is the nature of a story, especially when it comes to Western literature, right? And that's why oftentimes when baby faces have this drawn out chase, the reign becomes a little lackluster, right? You've seen that. We're seeing that across the street with Cody, right? Cody got that belt back, and people are like, from the title perspective, he doesn't feel like it's the John Cena show again. Cody is the champ, but, like, it's still John Cena. You know what I'm saying? Like, so this is common in pro wrestling specifically, which is a reason why oftentimes heel champions were the thing in pro wrestling, especially the NWA, because in the local territory, the main character was your local babyface. His goal was to win the NWA world title. And that was the fight. Like, I always think about, you know, Von Erichs versus Ric Flair, which gave birth to the Freebird feud, right? Like, Gary Hart told the story over a year of Kerry trying to get the title from Flair. Like, that was this great story. So that it's easier to tell that story when you are the champ. And wrestling, WWE specifically, has always gone about it the other way. This goes back to the beginning with Bruno. Bruno was the undefeatable babyface champion. Then we had it with Backlund. Then we had it with Hogan, right? And then you had it with Steve Austin, who had more ups and downs. But like, that's kind of what we think is what it should be. You should have the babyface drawing on top. When in reality, you know, WWF in this country was the only place that really had it. Like other places, like with the NWA, the traveling champ was typically a heel. So it's not uncommon to have this kind of a thing driving the promotion. Even WCW, Ric Flair was the champion for the majority of that. You know, it was a heel territory. So I don't think it's crazy to have this. And I think this where business is bearing this out. Like, I get you want Hangman to have 8-month title reign where, like, you know, you can be warm and squeaky and fuzzy, but that makes for shit storytelling, dude. It really does. So like, I think we need to see the Hangman suffer more because that's his lot.
Yeah. Yeah, we're telling that story in AEW, and then of course TNA is telling that story with Mike Santana. I get the feeling he's going to win that belt in a few months, and they will be like, see, we told you. What? Let me get to the chat. Let me get to the chat. It's been a while. Yeah, let me see. WOH Buckeye, what did you think of Tony during the scrum addressing the Briscoes and the former Turner exec that refused to allow them on TBS and TNT? So I didn't watch the scrum, but apparently Tony, I did see the notes on it. Tony Khan said that guy that refused to let Jay Briscoe in is like long gone. So good riddance to that guy. You know what? Jay screwed up. He said some really awful stuff. And this guy was a barrier, you know, and he made amends for it for years. And he was held down for years, and this guy just wouldn't let the guy in the company because of what he said, not because of the apology, but because of the actions and, you know, before that. So I'm glad that guy's gone. So
me too.
We've
gone over this numerous times on this show. You and I are both, I think it's just because we're guys in our mid-40s, or I'm in my mid-40s, you're in your early 40s, who have made mistakes and wouldn't want people to base the rest of our lives on mistakes we made when we were younger. And unfortunately, the internet rage culture that we have is you're not allowed to make mistakes. When you said something stupid, no matter how many times you apologize for it, you know, Twitter will hold you to those words forever because, you know, rage sells. And I think that's a shame because Jay Briscoe was awesome and, you know, I miss him.
Yeah, same here. Man, every once in a while, a Facebook memory will pop up and I just have to delete it because, like, I cannot believe I said that.
Oh, dude, I had the same thing. I'm like, God, what an asshole. Like, I do that all the time. Or what a crybaby. Yeah. Like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Let's see. XWF says I do miss Jay. Yeah, I miss Jay too. Yeah. WOH Buckeye said it mattered. I think he's talking about the national title. It mattered when Tully had it while feuding with Dusty and Ron Garvin. That was a TV title.
No, he did have the national heavyweight title, but as AEW, they had like 8 titles. Like watch 84, 85 world championship wrestling. Like they have a shit ton of, interestingly enough, this is when they merged Crockett with Georgia National, and so you had an influx of both of those title belts. So that time in that promotion, again where a lot of Tony's DNA booking comes from, there's a shit ton of titles in that. It mattered because Tully mattered. Belts don't fucking matter. No titles matter. All that matters is who has them and what value they have. That's why Mexico doesn't really care about belts. They just have belts when they need them. Oh, here's a belt. And you go, like, it's the belt itself doesn't matter. It's the person who carries the belt.
Yeah. Let's see. Chris says, do you guys think Full Gear had too much bloody matches?
I do, so actually.
I think we just had Blood and Guts, and now we had Full Gear. I don't think blood is special in this company anymore. They should probably scale it back. And I'm not saying scale it back because I think, you know, it's too bloody and it makes me sick and it's queasy and it's not good for kids. I'm not saying it from that perspective. I'm saying, like, there is such a thing as too much of a good thing, right? And blood, when used in the right situations, can actually tell a great story and can, you know, make a lot of money. But I think we're getting kind of towards that, you know, Dusty and Crockett era where there's just blood for the sake of blood. And we probably need to scale that back.
If I could have had this show over again, I thought this. I don't think that Mark Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher needed the blood. Like Moxley and O'Reilly, I think it worked for that. And I think it worked for the main event. I don't think that, I don't think the TNT title belt match needed it, to be honest. Even with a no disqualification plunder thing, I don't think they needed to gush the way they did. Like, I think that I get they're trying to stand out on that show and it's hard, but I think that it's too much. And by the time, because Joe was a bloody mess, and I think that needed to happen. I think you needed that image of bloody ass Samoa Joe with that belt. And Moxley's gonna do what Moxley does, and I'm fine with that. But I can't remember, did Darby and Pac, did Darby bleed in his match against Pac? I don't even remember because it was so early in that show. But yeah, I mean, and I'm not this guy at all. I like violence in pro wrestling. I like blood. But I think just I think this month there's been a little too much of it. I think you gotta, I think less is more sometimes, but I don't want it to like disappear. Like if you watch WWE, they don't bleed. They're a bunch of freaking sissies. So I like that there's some gore, but I was a little numb to it, to be honest. You know, I don't want to be numb to blood.
It, you know? When you see it three or four times in one night, it doesn't mean anything by the time you get to the main event. And I think they could have a little less blood. And I think that they should get the show down to 3 hours. I will always think that. I guess now that I'm, you know, older and I'm on the East Coast. So when it came time to watch the show, I was like, this thing's going to go 5.5 hours. That, you know, it'll take me 3 days to watch this thing. So I'm picking and choosing what parts of the show I watch, because it's just a lot.
I don't disagree, because I skip some of the show too, but I think that's my right as a consumer to do that. Yeah. I think I know for a fact their idea behind this, you're paying $50 for these shows. We want you to feel like you're getting your money's worth. We want you to feel there's value to this. And I understand that. I appreciate that. Like WWE gives you a format show that's full of commercials and video packages. Like I want them to feel like that. I would rather people complain about the shows being too long. I really would. Yep. I don't think that's a problem.
I don't think it's a problem. That's more like, I just prefer shows to be 3 hours.
And I get it.
Give me 3 hours action packed. I don't need 12 matches. I'm good with 8. You know, like I guess if I had a criticism, Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe probably could have been the main event of Dynamite. You know, I agree. Like, yeah. And I think it would have been just as effective. But I get them wanting to send the crowd home happy. You know, Tony Khan, and I said this on a Patreon earlier this week. I did a Q&A for the Patreon, because I was still just kind of irritated at TNA. I was like, I think TNA takes their ticket buyers for granted. I don't think they have any respect for the fact that people are willing to spend their money to go to their shows, and they phone things in. Tony Khan never does that. He always gives you more than what you ask for. Mm-hmm. The wrestlers are always giving you way more than what you ask for. When you think there's too many kickouts, it's because they're trying so hard to gain your affection, and they're trying so hard to let you know that they appreciate the fact that you spent your hard-earned money, especially at a time when our economy is in the tank and it's the holiday season and people don't have expendable income. And so for them to do that, I really appreciate that. No other wrestling promotion treats their fans that way. And I think AEW fans actually take AEW for granted at times, because they're just so spoiled. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They have a really great company and an owner that actually respects them and values their patronage. So we got Lady B in the house. So speaking of Jeff Jarrett, what happened to him wanting to be champion in 2025? That seems like so long ago. I will tell you what happened. This is not inside information. This is just Mike watches TV and Mike sees what happens. That promo that him and MJF did, where they were just insulting each other's wives and calling each other's wives sluts and whores, went so bad that they just dropped the whole fucking thing and said, "Jeff, get off TV." I don't know that for a fact. I just know it's true, because that was the cringiest thing I've ever seen on television. In fact, I don't think Jeff Jarrett's coming back in 2026. His deal is up at the end of this year. I don't think he's coming back, because that was he was on a great babyface run, and then they just let him and MJF go out there without a script, and then that, and he's the veteran, right? And that's what they came up with, and we haven't seen him since, other than like pre-shows during panel.
Yeah, he does pre-show stuff. No, I don't think you're wrong. And I'm of the mind too that every babyface, everyone in the pro should say, "I want to be world champion."
Yeah.
They should. They should all say that. That should be everybody's goal. You watched Crockett, right, in the 80s, and everyone got on the mic and said, "I'm coming after Ric Flair." Whether they got the match or not, they all let you know that I want to be the champion. And I'm a firm believer in that. Again, I think we all get WWE brain sometimes, because it was only out so long where the only person that should mention the champion is the person in the program with the champion. I don't believe in that. I'm a jock, right? I'm going to go athlete brain first. If you're not trying to be the best, if you're not trying to be the champion, why are you here? right? And I think everyone should say that. So I don't have a single problem with Jeff saying, I want to be champ in 2025, and it didn't happen, because for the vast majority of us, we never get to our goals, and that's real life.
Yeah. Yep, that's really but yeah, I really think that that MJF
right.
left a bad taste in everybody's mouth, for sure. All right, a couple more, and then I have like a couple more topics, and we're gonna send this thing home. XWF says, I do hope next year Okada does become AEW champion and have a long run with it. I mean, he seems to be doing fine where he's at, but yeah, it'd be, I mean, I think they brought him over with the hopes that they can move him up to the world title, but they, it just hasn't happened. But he's been kept strong.
Yeah. They're giving him a long reign with this, whatever the belt is called this week. You could kick the tires on Okada and make him the champ tomorrow. It's harder. It's harder for someone like Okada to be the champion of promotion like AEW, where talking people into the building is important, right? And it's not like it's impossible. He does have Don Callis, but you don't want Don Callis to drive that whole thing. So you could you could have Okada be the champion. That being said, I don't know if I want Okada as a long reigning champion in this company. I don't know if I do or not.
Yeah, and I just know that Tony Khan loves MJF. It's been a while since he's been champion. I know he's coming back. I think he just filmed another TV show or another movie at some point. He's coming back. Everybody thinks they're going to go back to Swerve. I don't know. I just feel like MJF is lingering out there. They're going to end up going back to him. They have to at some point.
So MJF lost the title to Joe, right? And then Joe lost the title to Swerve. So I think everybody assumes that, oh, Swerve's back. Swerve's going to take that title from Joe. I think that is an intentional swerve, if you will.
Right.
I think that Swerve's going to get fucked on that title, because it was him and Paige standing tall, right? I think Swerve's going to get hosed. I think you're going to get a longer Joe reign than we think we're going to get. And how MJF plays into that, I'm not sure, but I don't think Swerve's going to get that belt back right away.
I agree. Alter the Squirrel Patreon subscriber, Alter the Squirrel. What's up, my brother? He said, looking forward to Jeff Jarrett's TNA return. I think that's probably the way to go for Jeff. If he wants to do like a 1-year retirement tour, TNA would be the place to do it. I mean, it's the place that he created. And they seem to be, I know they TNA phoned it in since Bound for Glory, but 2025 was their most successful year ever. And I think 2026 is looking pretty good, especially if they get this TV deal, which people are saying it like any day now it's going to get announced. I don't know. It's Groundhog Day with that freaking thing. I've been talking about it for 4 years, but you know, we might be there soon. So I don't know, but I think that if Jeff Jarrett's going to do one last run, it's TNA. It has to be.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it doesn't. Yeah. I mean, like, I didn't get the vibe that he was on his way out of the company. We'll see. Let's see how 2026 plays out. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I only said that because he said that it was his last year. And he started off in the beginning of the year was like wrestling and doing promos. And then they took him off TV altogether. And we haven't seen him other than pre-show panels. So that's just me reading the tea leaves. So I don't know. last couple topics. So we talked about Samoa Joe, and then I also brought up Frankie Kazarian being the TNA world champion. So you got Samoa Joe from the early 2000s era as the AEW world champion. You got Frankie Kazarian from the early 2000s indie era as the TNA world champion, and you got CM Punk, the WWE world champion. Right now, the youngest world champion in America is Cody Rhodes, and he's 40. Is that an indictment on the youth coming up, or is that an indictment on bookers, or is it just that these guys are just in way better shape than the 40-year-olds of our generation when we were kids? You know what I mean? And like, because like a lot of wrestlers didn't live to 40 when we were in the 90s and the early 2000s. But I think these guys are just taking better care of their bodies, and it just takes longer to get to where they're at, or like what can we make of this?
All right. So let's look at this. I think it's a great topic of conversation. As a guy who's 45, who started competing again this year and trains pretty hard, and like, you know,
you're still crushing those little shits at school, right? When they try to step to you, you're like, you're slamming them, right?
Yeah. Every day. Punk them. Every day. Turds. No. So that's the thing is, like, you know, and I compete with guys my own age. I'm not just doing that. as we are trained to believe that when you pass 40, you're done. And we train smarter. Nutrition is better. We know more than we ever did. Guys in the 80s did not take care of themselves. Like, even the guys who look great were out drinking every night, snorting coke off of bars, like not living a good athlete lifestyle. And like Jim Cornette, like this is the thing with Jim Cornette and Will Ospreay. Yeah. They were going back and forth. Some guys were just fucking around in the living room. Jim Cornette's like, they're all going to be in the hospital. And it's like, that guy fell off the scaffold and blew out both his knees. And I think if he approached it as, hey, I was pretty stupid when I was young, don't be like me, the message would be delivered a little bit different. The fact that he does that and doesn't ever point the finger back at himself, you know, it hurts the message, right? That being said, you're talking about guys that did do stupid shit in the ring, lots of stupid shit, and they're in their 40s and they look good and they're competing hard. And the fact that these were all dudes that came up outside, and you can give me CM Punk was an OVW, but he was the man, he was the ROH guy long before that. Like, these are guys that were passed over by what WWE was looking for in the early 2000s, right? These are guys that proved that a PC-like system, because I keep hearing, well, you can't develop people outside of PC. These are guys that prove that that isn't true, that you don't need the corporate machine if you love pro wrestling and you're damn good at it, right? Cody's a different story because he happens to be the son of Virgil Reynolds, right? So he came up in the system. But the rest of these guys did not. And so I think that's I also think too that because these guys came up in an era when pro wrestling was a monopoly, where you had to fight and kick and claw and scratch to make a name for yourself, right? They weren't spoiled. None of these guys was spoiled coming up. So you have guys that love this shit and happen to be really fucking good at it still. And I do think that it is an indictment on the current pro wrestling scene, that the only people you can see leading your promotions are guys in their 40s, because quite frankly, they're better than most of the other people around, right? Because they weren't spoiled when they were young. They did come up the hard way. They did do, and they're all still really fucking good at their jobs. Yeah. So like, I don't think it's an indictment on booking. I don't think it's an indictment on anything to say about where at. I think one, athletes are better and they take better care of themselves. And it long, like, look at Tom Brady. Like, you can, your career is lasting longer now than it used to. And I just don't think that the guy, I don't think anyone is as good, right? Like, who, and there's exceptions. Well, yeah, Will Ospreay, it's worth, sure. But the fact that these guys are here at this moment in this conversation just proves that it's still all about, you know, how much do you love this job? How good are you at this job? And your effort and your value is still defined by what you do between the ropes, not how old you are or where you went to college or any of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Frankie came up, you know, he was trained by Killer Kowalski, and then he came up through the California independent scene, and then he had to like get himself over in TNA, and he had to fail for years in TNA. Years. Uh-huh. And then he ends up signing with the WWE. And it doesn't work out there because they wanted him to cut his hair and he said no. and then he got fired. He comes back and then he all of a sudden starts getting over in TNA with him and the tag team with Christopher Daniels, and then they move over to Ring of Honor and he gets over there. And then he just like, here's the thing about him. He was signed with AEW. And AEW had just gotten so big that he was essentially forgotten about. He was like one of the founding fathers. Like, I know you got Cody, you got Omega, and you got the Young Bucks, but right below them is like SCU and like some of those other guys. You know what I mean? And he was like that next tier down. And then AEW grows. Scorpio Sky's got tons of heat. Christopher Daniels getting older and becomes office. And now Frankie's forgotten about. But AEW wasn't going to fire him. They were going to get rid of him. He could have stayed there forever. And Scott D. Moore came out with an article earlier this year, earlier this week, when after Frankie was the champion, and said that he chose to take less money with Impact. He goes, I told him, it's like, Impact, we cannot pay you nowhere near what AEW is paying you. And in fact, I'm not even going to make you an offer because it's like you shouldn't take it. And he said, no, I want to come anyway. And so he took way less money to come to Impact because he still believed in himself that he could be a top guy. Now, I've had a lot of criticisms of Frankie lately, and it has nothing to do with his wrestling ability. I think he's a great pro wrestler. You and I have I told you earlier this year when there was a main event, it was Ethan Page, Frankie Kazarian, and Joe Hendry. And I was like, that was really good. And your exact words to me is like, well, yeah, Frankie was in it. It's got Frankie, of course. Yeah, Frankie's an amazing pro wrestler. Mm-hmm. I think his character right now is just an undercard chicken shit heel and kind of a cartoonish type thing. But I've never had any issue with like his ability. He is fantastic, and he is just proof that you don't have to go through that system. He never went and did flatbacks and for hours and four rolls for hours. And same with CM Punk. Yeah, he did go to OVW, but that was a real training school. They cranked out a lot of really fucking amazing wrestlers. And he was Ring of Honor, and he was TNA long before that. So he came up through the hard way, and same with Samoa Joe. And it's just crazy that those three guys are now world champions all at the same time.
Dude, Frankie's problem with AEW was the fact that SCU was supposed to be Scorpio Sky's vehicle to become their first black superstar, right? And then Scorpio just didn't, I don't think he's ever had that personality. How he keeps getting re-signed is beyond me. But I mean, like, Frankie, they don't use him. I mean, it's nothing wrong with his talent. They just don't ever use him.
They just announced that I think he just wrestled on Collision and got a title shot.
Oh, he's on Collision? I never watched Collision. Like, yeah. I don't know. I get where Frankie's coming from. It's like, you think you have more in the tank and you got to go prove yourself. And we talk about guys gambling on themselves, like Alan Angels, right? He could have been, he left AEW, went to TNA, and it didn't work for him. You know, he's a guy who had some potential. Maybe someday something happens to the guy, but it just didn't work. Frankie gambled on himself, and it's working. And I can't hold the fact that Delirious is a shitty booker and always has been against Frankie Kazarian, because in the ring, he's fucking great. I've always thought Frankie Kazarian is great. Like, you know, I can't blame him for them, for Tommy Dreamer and Delirious having shitty ideas.
Yeah. Let's see. We're going to finish off. We got some more chats, and then we're going to head out of here. Let's see. Okay. Millie Gaming, Tony needs to cut half the roster and find TV time for the whole roster through two shows so we can actually be invested in storylines.
Okay, you're wrong. Here's the thing. Is Tony Khan comes from a sports background, and because you never play, I'm going to guess you never played a sport in your life. So you don't know what it does to the human body and how hard it is grinding week after week after week after week is on the human body, right? And how difficult it is to show up, even if you only go once a week. Hey, guess what? Pro football players play once a week and their bodies are beat up.
Right.
But as a pro wrestler, we're expecting, hold on, I'm on a tirade. Whereas a pro wrestler, we're expected to be, they should expect to be on every TV, go all these shows, get their ass kicked thoroughly, and they're supposed to be on TV every week. Tony's idea is that people need time off. So he tries to program this with it in mind. He wants a big roster so he can give people time off so they can come in and out. That is literally what the idea is. Now, that being said, some people have too much time off. And I'm going to be honest with you, if you have a smaller roster and two shows, a small roster with less people is going to expose it even more. So I don't value your thoughts. You're stupid.
So here's my thoughts. I think they could do a lot with a smaller roster, just from like an over, like if I'm running the financials for it, I think that they can keep that overhead down because they just have so many talents on the roster that they don't use. And those guys don't know. Those guys are idiots. The ones that they don't use, they're just complaining. When in reality, they could be out there working indies and keeping themselves relevant, right? But they don't want to do that because they're making so much money from AEW. So, and a lot of like I always use Private Party as an example. They were there for all those years. They never really got better. And it's because they weren't working indies. They weren't mm-hmm. touring around. They're only working once a week, and they didn't want to do any more than that. And you know, Anna Jay, it was somebody that was just fresh on my mind because she's hitting free agency soon. And everybody's like, oh, well, they have to sign Anna Jay. And I was like, Anna Jay is in the mm-hmm. same spot that she was in when she first signed there. She hasn't really improved her overall game to where she's climbing up that ladder. And why? It's like, when's the last time you saw Anna Jay booked on a super indie? I don't think you have, right? She just wants to go to AEW TV and get that mailbox money. And so they don't improve. I think people do need to get fired. not half the roster, but I think that there are some people in that company that are in the same position that they've been in for the last 5 years. They need to go do something else for a while and go find themselves and then get brought back because they're not doing anything to make themselves better.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. What you're saying is different than what this dork means, like trimming the roster down so the shows matter. It's like if you can't tell stories, like the idea originally was to have, like, you know, not separate rosters, but have, like, there are people that work one show or the other, right? And the idea is to make those shows special and have talent. Like, is there too many, are there too many people on the roster? Yeah, probably. Are there so many people that are employed by this company that it doesn't matter? Yeah, sure. But, like, ultimately, that's not my concern, right? Yeah. And I do think that AEW, there's a lot of people, there are people who complain, like, these people are on the same spot they were. Well, whose fault is that? Because yeah. We have seen people move up. We have seen people improve their stock in this company. It's always Swerve. The people that go out there. Swerve is a great example.
Kyle Fletcher.
O'Reilly now. O'Reilly just beat John Moxley. Right. And it's the people that do shit. It's the people that work really hard when they do have their opportunities. And there's a shit ton of lazy people in that company. A ton of them. So at the same time, like, I don't think it's bad to have those people under roster so you could, like, give them another chance. And quite frankly, someone's got to lose.
Yeah.
Right. There are people. I want you to look at WWF television from 84 to 89. There's people that never leave the mid card. In fact, the vast majority of the company never leaves the mid card.
And a lot of them are in the Hall of Fame now because their Hall of Fame is fake.
Because their Hall of Fame isn't real. It's just whoever was on that show for a long time. Right. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't understand, like, the idea that, like, well, they should, this idea that someone should come in, do jobs, and then move to being a world champion. It's not real. It's never happened. Yeah. Like, Bret Hart is the one guy who did it. Maybe Shawn Michaels.
And Lady B says, Soapbox JD is my favorite JD.
Thank you.
And, Nap 528, if you had to keep one, who would you choose, Anna Jay or Hook? Here's the thing. I think that Anna Jay, if she were to go to a smaller promotion, I think that she would shine there and she could work and maybe look like she's got like a main eventer look, you know what I mean? I think she's got some talent, but she's just been, you know, it's hard to get out there and work really hard when you're sleeping in satin sheets every night. You know what I mean? Like, that was the thing that Sugar Ray Leonard said. It's like, it's really hard to get out and running at 4 a.m. when you're laying in bed and you got satin sheets and you got a butler, like, she's making really good money and never really had to grind and hustle the way that somebody like a Frankie or CM Punk or Samoa Joe had to do. So I just don't know that hunger is there, but that's where I would like to see her have that hunger. I feel the same way about Hook. So I guess my answer is I see them at the same level. Hook is a guy that's been in this company and I don't think he's improved at all. The guy can't form a sentence. Like, I've seen him talk. He just can't. He needs to go take some lessons. And to this day, I've never seen him have like a longer great match. And I'm sure that they could deal with some bells and whistles, but the guy's been around a while. And now he's back to being in the ops and he's going to be like, you know, fourth on the depth chart in the ops. And it's, you know, kind of reminds me of that, of like a rookie quarterback that's on a second contract. And they're still saying that they're trying to develop this guy. And it's like, the guy's been around for 6 years. He's not that young anymore. It's like at this, like in the 80s, guys that have been around for 6 years were top guys a lot of times. So I don't know. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for Hook. And he just got signed to another deal. So they obviously like the guy. I just don't see much in him. I want to see more out of that guy.
So it's interesting, both these two, because Anna Jay got signed during the pandemic. She had a match with, I believe, Britt Baker that actually impressed some people. And she'd only been working for a handful of months before that. She has potential and she has a fantastic look. Like, she's gorgeous. Like, but she hasn't gotten any better. She hasn't shown that she has any much charisma. Like, she was signed off potential, which is fine. Lots of people get signed off potential.
Yeah.
Like, if she were to leave tomorrow, I'm sure NXT would come and give her a call.
Oh, for sure.
I'm sure they think, hey, we could do something with this. Maybe they could, maybe they couldn't. But I mean, like, Would it kill her to leave and do something else? Absolutely not. Like, you're right. She got signed way too young, but she would have gotten signed anyway, just based on her look. Mm-hmm. So she had like advantages, which is pro wrestling. Hook, same thing. He got signed because he's Taz's kid, right? He did show promise early on. Like, before he was wrestling, that dude was over, right? He was over in those early Team Taz skits. Like, he was over until he really started working. Right. And then I heard the same thing about fucking flying Brian Pillman Jr. by people mm-hmm. were like, oh, he didn't get a chance. Oh, look at him now. Tony fumbled. Lexus King. Look at that cool chair he slides in on. And now he's being fodder for the TNA story because he's not that good.
Yeah, right? he's NXT C squad, and he's doing jobs on TNA TV coming up. So. Right.
I mean, like, yeah. So guys, some people are going to get advantages. You chose specifically two people who have been given advantages. Like, should they re-sign Anna Jay? I don't know. I mean, she's been there for a long time, and there's plenty of people that have gotten the shot. Chris Statlander's been there for a long time too, and she's the champ. Like, there have been a lot of people who've been at the same time, and Anna Jay has been hurt, and she comes off lazy. I said it years ago, and I don't think anything has changed. She doesn't strike me as someone who works hard. I do think if she goes in the NXT system, she'll get a push specifically because she was AEW.
Yep.
But then it'll fade really fucking quick. Because I don't personally, from what I've seen, I don't think she's got the love of the game.
Yeah, and that's why I said I think it's okay to fire people. Or it's like, it's okay to let people's, like, it's okay to not resign someone. Like, don't be afraid if the enemy gets them, right? Mm-hmm. They need this for their growth sometimes. Like, I fully believe that people that are kind of loafing, they need to go through some hard times. I look at Drew McIntyre, right? Like, that guy was given a lot of advantages when he came into the WWE. And then all of a sudden they pushed him down the card. They made him a geek, and then they fired him. And what did he do? He went out there and put on 30 pounds of muscle, which I'm sure was just all natural. And he went to TNA, and he went to all the indies. He lowered his price, and he made himself a star, and he come back. And now he's one of the biggest stars in all of pro wrestling. Like, that's always like my prime example of what you should do when you're faced with adversity. It's like, no, fuck you. You're wrong. I'm right. Let's go. And I'm going to make myself a star and prove you wrong. And then the money that you paid me before is not going to cut the money that you're going to be paying me in the future. Right. And I want to see, like, Anna Jay and Hook just got re-signed, but like, people, I want to see Private Party go through that. I'm so frustrated with Private Party. Every time they wrestle the Young Bucks, they look like they're one of the greatest tag teams in the world. Because anybody else that they wrestle, it's like, it's like the lights aren't on. It's so weird. And they've been gone for months, and they've only done like one indie match. And I'm like, you guys have an opportunity here right in front of you to go make yourselves, you know, stars, and you're not taking it. Like, this is what these people, that these companies are trying to see, if you have that hunger in it. If do you have that dog in you? Do you fucking love this game or not? No, you're sitting at home waiting for a contract. You may not get one. Tony Khan might bring him right back because he loves him. I don't know, but.
But then it's Tony Khan's fault for not pushing everybody. Like, this is why I hate online discourse when it comes to these talents, is because, like, oh, why aren't they moved? They're in the same position. Yeah, because they have the same attitude. What have you done to stand out? Like, you can use Drew McIntyre. What a great example. There's also Ryback.
Yeah. Yep.
You know? Right.
How many, what did Ryback do when he got fired from WWE? Complain? Like mm-hmm. That's been it.
Started a podcast and bitched, right?
Yep.
And then, like, look at Matt Cardona. Matt Cardona got a little, there you go, pat on the back from WWE to come back, and he's always wanted that. But he made his own, like, he's done his own thing since leaving. I know he really wants to go back there to prove something to himself. But, I mean, he's had a great indie run. Like, it's worked out really well for him. Like, I mean, you don't have to be, and if you have to be within one of the big three-letter name companies to be successful, like, do you really belong doing this, man? That's why so many people get cut by NXT. You never hear from them again. That's why I respect, like, Odyssey Jones. He's out there in NOAH working, man. That's, or All Japan, excuse me. He's out there in All Japan working. Well, like, crazy.
He got cut for domestic violence.
So I withdraw that. If I knew that, I forgot about that. Withdraw that critique.
He claims his innocence. And in Japan, they don't care. So I just wanted to correct the record.
Oops.
Yeah.
My bad.
I don't want to end on that note.
Okay, Zion Quinn. Let me go back to Zion fucking Quinn. Like, that guy's same deal. He's working in Japan, that he is with NOAH. And, like, he's trying, right? That dude can't. I picked the wrong guy. Like,
the guy, Parker Boudreau, is a guy he got fired from NXT, and then Tony Khan, like, the guy's a Florida guy, and, you know, played at, I think, Florida International, one of the Florida schools, played football, played linebacker. So, of course, AEW brought him in, and he wasn't ready. Like, so he's fired by NXT. AEW brings him in. He's still not ready, and he hasn't given up on himself. He's working in Glate, and he's doing a lot of the indies. and he's out there like hustling and grinding, and maybe, who knows, in a couple of years he might find his way back to the American TV scene, and he'll be that wrestler that they all thought that he could be. But I think people need to go through that fire sometimes. Some people can't, you know, there's guys like, you know, Trick Williams and Obafemi, they can go to NXT, and like, that's, you know, I know Trick Williams had an indie run in the Carolinas, but for the most part, most of his wrestling has been in NXT, and they can actually keep improving, and they can get TV ready, and they can become big stars. A lot of people need to go through and work Mexico, work Japan, work Europe, work all the American indies. They need to go through that in order to find some greatness. I would say, look at the template that CM Punk, Samoa Joe, and Frankie Kazarian now, right? AJ Styles, like those guys, what they had to do to get to where they're at. And sure, then also take a look at Drew McIntyre, Matt Cardona, and a lot of those guys, and maybe you can get to that level one day. But guys, we are way over time. It's late. I have to get up at 5 a.m. and drive to Charlotte. So it's going to be a short week, but I still got to do 3 days in Charlotte this week. But so that is going to do it for us, man. I wanted to talk about the new UFO doc. Okay, I'll talk about that another time, but that's going to do it for us this time on the Mike overtime, and JD show. Overtime. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit, this isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition's starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from...
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collins, and I am the host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, a show right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we take a deep look at individual issues and stories that are going on in the wrestling world. Each episode is about a different topic, and we take a thorough and educated look at things ranging from current booking trends to breakdowns of individual performers and angles to investigations into different fan cultures across the industry. In addition, we keep a close eye on the wrestling media, and as a professional journalist, I bring a unique perspective to how current issues in wrestling are being covered and discussed through the wrestling media. We have a revolving series of guests from across wrestling punditry joining us on each episode, and we hope that you make the choice to give us a listen on wherever you get your podcast from.